It's now time to hit the rewind button as we join those cheeky chaps over at the Retro Asylum.
Welcome along to the Retro Asylum, the UK's oldest retro gaming podcast show. This is Mass, and I'm here with Chris.
You're just making things up now.
I am just making things up, but we are the oldest, aren't we?
We've never introduced a podcast in that way before.
No, but we are. I mean, we just released an episode probably not even released yet. We will release an episode in a few days. So, but when the listeners are listening to this, it will already have been released, and that thus it will have been released sometime in the past. So we just released an episode celebrating our 10 years as a podcast.
Yeah, this is like a hangover recording, isn't it, from the party on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
About 10-year anniversary party.
Yeah.
Amazing achievement.
So we must be the oldest retro gaming podcast.
Well, I think
in the UK's oldest, at least.
Well,
not really.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Retro Gaming Roundup, I think, was around.
But they're not there anymore, are they?
Yeah, they are.
Are they still around?
So this is where, you know, they do these. So they do. It's really long, Retro Gaming Roundup. I don't know how often they release, but they have. So Simon Butler does a section, and there's a guy called Mike. I forget his name.
Oh, yeah, that's true, of course.
Yeah. They're good. It's really good.
I'm gonna just redo the intro. Everybody, are you ready? Welcome along to one of the UK's oldest retro gaming podcast shows.
Award-winning retro gaming podcast.
Well, that as well, that as well. But that was before my time, so that's not important.
I know. We ride on the coattails of other people's success.
Yes, exactly.
Don't we? Like Matt Wilshire.
Yes. Hi, Matt. So, mate, we are far too late in recording this episode. We have been wanting
to... What are we talking about again?
I forgot as well. I'm getting too old, mate. Getting too old.
Oh, Maximo.
Ah, yes, yes. So the Game Club episode of Maximo on the PS2 is finally being recorded. But we should have released this about, 2 weeks ago at least, 3 weeks ago. But life got in the way. So now we're here, ready to talk Maximo. And I'm really looking forward to it because, man, I loved that game.
Yeah, we did talk about, didn't we, whether we should just let it slide because we're so late. Now you've had things going on. I've had COVID. I've had COVID. and we did say, should we? We're closer to December than we are to October. Should we just leave it? But I think we both. It didn't really sit comfortably with me because I love this game, and yeah. I know you do too.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that we're actually going to spend a bit of time talking about it. It deserves it.
Oh yes. Oh yes. I mean, this game took me completely by surprise, really. We asked Raushi to pick some candidates for us, some lesser-known PS2 titles, and I didn't think that I would find what is now probably my favorite PS2 game in that list, but I did. Maximo is brilliant.
Yeah, I'm completely the same. Mm. Yeah, and to be honest, and for reasons we'll go into later, it comes really close to being an absolute all-timer of any platform and any generation for me.
Yeah.
It, there's a couple of things that just stop it from achieving that super level of greatness in my eyes, but God, did I enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. But before we get into too many details about the game, I know you've got some news you'd like to talk about, but before we do that, actually, what have you been up to, Chris, since we last recorded?
We should probably caveat this whole section that this is going to be a little wafflier than usual because Mads and I only decided 24 hours ago that we were going to do this. And since then, I think we both probably worked for 23 hours of those 24 hours. So so this is going to be a little more a little more sketchy than our sketchiness usually is sketchy.
And that's quite sketchy, though.
It was very sketchy. So most recently, obviously, been playing Soft Porn Adventure. I'm not going to turn this into the Soft Porn Adventure show because that will come in probably only a couple of weeks. But yeah. I've been playing Soft Porn Adventure. I've almost finished it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to the point where I think a lot of people... I've got to a point where I hit a bug, which is a shame, which means I've got to start again. But that's not too much of a trouble with this game, because if you know what you're doing, you can get through it in probably half an hour.
Yeah.
So I think I'm right at the very end. I lost the key item, which can happen in this game. If you drop something, it can just disappear into the ether, and that happened to me. Okay. So I'll talk more about what happened on the soft porn game. But I've been playing that. I've been carrying on playing I've been mentioned on Discord. I've been playing some of the Scott Adams games on my Apple II. Yeah. I've been really enjoying those. So I'm just about to start Mission Impossible, which we mock copyright law, Mads. Scott Adams laughed in the face of copyright when he decided to call his third adventure Mission Impossible. Mm. Why not?
Yeah.
It's a good film. Yeah. Why not? So so that'll be a good one. That'll be good. Recently, so we are coming up on Retro Asylum in the next few weeks. We will have a crossover with our other podcast, Playthrough, where we'll play. So the format is going to be, we've got two people.
So I feel like there should be a drum roll here or something, because it's finally happening. It's finally happening. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about doing a Monkey Island episode for as long as I can remember.
Yes.
Never done it.
And this is not that Monkey Island episode, but it's a Monkey Island episode, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I like the format. And the format is going to be that we've got two people in Andy and Jim who have never played such a sacred cow of a game. Yeah. And aren't scared to laugh in the face of our nostalgia. And then you've got two people who probably venerate Monkey Island as being something from the outer heavens.
I bet by the amount of threats that I've thrown their way, they will be scared to laugh in the face of our nostalgia. But I'm looking forward to recording that episode with them. I like the format as well. It's a good idea, Chris.
Well, I think I can't remember who came up with it, but I was thinking as well that maybe this would be a nice format. You know, you can imagine something where, you know, we play Action Biker or something, and you get Steve talking from a purely nostalgia point of view, and I've never played it, you know, and having that kind of, you know, that it's a bit, it's almost like a collision, isn't it, of nostalgia and what it feels like to play now. So I played through Secret of Monkey Island. It took me a little longer than I thought it might. I remember the first half of the game up to the ship, like the back of my hand, got through that really, really quickly. And then got to Monkey Island and then thought, actually, I forget what to do now. And it was only a couple of years since I last played it.
Mm.
But I did manage to get through it. You know, probably took me about 5 hours or so. And then the other thing I've been doing, which I'm very excited about, because it's something I've wanted to do for probably 20 years, is I've started playing Xenosaga.
Oh, yeah. So inspired by our play of Xenogears lately.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, and I thought if I'm going to play it, I want to be able to compare Xenosaga to Xenogears. Mm. I thought I might as well get into it quickly after finishing Xenogears. So I'm about 10 hours in on that. And I'm really enjoying it.
So have you played the Xenoblade Chronicles on the Switch?
No.
No? Okay.
No. So I've got Xenoblade Chronicles, the original one on the Wii.
Okay.
I've got Xenoblade Chronicles 2 on the Switch. I've got X on the Wii U. But you know what I'm like, Mads? I have to play these things in order.
Yes.
So even though Xenoblade Chronicles bears absolutely has almost zero relevance to Xenogears and Xenosaga.
Okay.
They are spiritual successors at best. Mm. But yeah, Xenosaga is one of those games that if you didn't like Xenogears, stay clear of Xenosaga, because you spend more time watching that game than you do playing it.
Okay.
45-minute cutscenes.
Wow.
Yeah, easily. In fact, there's one that went on for about an hour and 10 minutes, but you did get a couple of save points.
Okay.
You know, it comes up in Xenogears when it comes up to you. Well, you probably never got this, but towards the end of Xenogears, when it gets very story heavy, you often get in the middle of story sequences, you often get, would you like to save your game after about 25 minutes?
Yeah, okay, at least.
So there's one sequence towards the start of Xenosaga where it literally is an hour and you can put your controller down, and other than selecting do you want to save yes or no, you have no need to touch it.
Okay.
It's like watching a movie.
Is it a good movie then? But
it's all right. I mean, the contemporary reviews of Xenosaga talk about how good the voice acting is.
Mm.
All I can say about that is it shows you how far we've come in 20 years.
Okay.
Because the voice acting is serviceable. It's serviceable. But it's not great. And when you're sitting there watching it for an hour, it can grate a little bit.
Okay.
But it looks good. You know, it's a PS2 game. It looks okay. It looks good. Character models. The art design is nowhere near as good as Xenogears. They've gone for that really bland and grey. Everything's set in space in Xenosaga. So all of the environments are space station-y environments.
Okay.
So they're all very clinical and bland.
Mm.
Character models look okay. Yasunori Mitsuda's back on music duty, so the music such that there is nice. But what is much better is it's actually a much, much better combat system, much more depth.
Mm.
So when you are actually playing the game rather than watching it, it's actually a lot more fun to play than Xenogears.
Yeah, okay.
I'm enjoying it. It's my jam, thing. So I'm going to enjoy it. But I would say for anyone who's listening to this, I think I have managed to convince Roushi to play it with me, which is nice because now I can chat to Roushi about it.
Mm.
But, people who are immediately turned off by the sound of Xenosaga are probably right to be turned off.
Okay.
To be honest.
It's probably not for me right now. I don't have that kind of time for playing games.
No, it's another 40 to 60 hours, depending on how much you engage with the mini games.
So many games to play, so little time, mate. But I've been playing some games as well, actually, because you did an excellent interview with the guys from Evercade, from Blaze, the other day.
And thank you.
After listening to that, I would say I have finally warmed up to the Evercade. I have been been ice cold for 1.5 years. Is that how long it's been out? I think. Me, it just, I mean, there are so many of these handheld little cheap devices that play some of the retro games. And I mean, I like my real hardware, as you know, and so on and so forth. So I've always just said it wasn't for me. But hearing those guys and hearing the passion they have about the project and the love that goes into it and how they're tweaking things so they don't work just as well as back in the day, but even better. And just this was a project I needed to support. So immediately after listening to that episode, I went out, I found a place I could buy it and bought the premium pack. And I didn't even consider whether I wanted to play the games a lot because I just wanted to support the project, really.
Yeah.
But picking it up, I've only plugged in the Atari cartridge, the first.
Yeah.
The very first cartridge. They're numbered, aren't they? So number one.
Yeah.
And been playing far too much Adventure whenever I have five
great,
minutes.
Isn't it?
and some of the other great games on there. And this little form factor, it's got a good D-pad. It's got some pretty nice buttons on there as well. And it's just a brilliant little device. So I'm sold. I'm even considering pre-ordering the Versus now.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. It's, you know, for the money.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't really go wrong.
No. And the cartridges are quite cheap as well. So I'm actually... I'm considering going and doing a full collection of those cartridges because it's not that expensive, and I mean there's so much love going into the curation there, and it's for me in the cottage it's a great way to play these old games because I can just lie on the couch and play 5-10 minutes and there's safe states and everything. It's just it's a brilliant little device, and I like that I'm buying the games and not just stealing ROMs as well. So yeah.
It's really nice as well hearing just how much effort they put into getting the emulation right.
Yeah.
Because these things live and die by their control system, and whether it's, even if it's not faithful to the original, whether it feels okay to play in your hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And the quality of the emulation.
Mm.
I mean, that is absolutely critical to getting this right. For anybody who, anybody like us, we would tell straight away, if the emulation was off, it'd just go away and it would, you wouldn't touch it again. But listening to Ryan talk about just how hard they worked for Double Dragon, for instance.
Yeah, he strikes me as a guy who doesn't say, this can't be done. He just says, hold my beer, and then he goes and fixes it.
No, it was good. They were good guys, actually. We were chatting off mic as well about, you know, he's been having some really stressful times just to put the final touches on the Evercade software.
Yeah.
And he was saying that day he just had problem after problem.
Mm.
So he sounded really stressed to begin with. And I was thinking, oh, God, this is not going to be good. And then he just completely relaxed into it.
Mm.
And it was really good in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really nice interview was made. And at least it made for one more Evercade fan. So, and I think some of our listeners have said the same. They've picked it up after listening to the episode. Mm-hmm. So that's great.
It's good to know.
Yeah.
So have you played any Briley Witch yet?
No, I haven't had time for it, mate. I've played almost no games apart from on my Evercade, really.
Well, I've got it as well, and I haven't played it, so you're in good company.
Yeah. I will play it, though. It seems whenever I think, now I'm going to play it, she releases a new point release. So now there's a 1.0.4 I need to download and get onto my...
Oh, I missed that. I've only got 1.03.
Yeah.
Okay.
I booted it up. I played 10 minutes, and it looks brilliant. So I'm really looking forward to having some time, but I can't see myself having a lot of gaming time in the next couple of months, really. But I'm playing the Game Club games. I need to focus on them. So I finished Soft Porn Adventure, unlike others who haven't even finished it yet, Chris. And I'm behind you on Taba High Score, I know.
I'm in the top 5.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah, I was in the top 4 until earlier today when Monster Hyde cracked 80,000. I'm about 78,000 is my highest score.
That's
so
a good score, mate. I think I'm like half that, aren't I?
But it's what you just need to put the time in, and I know that if you get the time and put it in, you'll beat my score because it is the beauty. Unlike Zookeeper, remember when I played Zookeeper when it felt like you needed luck to get a decent score on Zookeeper on any run. If the stars align, you were going to get a big score. Tapa just feels purely skill.
Mm.
Just the skill ceiling is so high, you could just get better and better and better at that game. And I have got steadily, I can feel myself just getting steadily better as the month goes on. My goal is to crack 100K, and I know I'll do it. It's just a question of when. I'm getting steadily better now. I don't have a game now where I score less than 60,000 points.
Okay, that's good.
So you know I'm just getting better, just getting more skillful in throwing the beers down the bar.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to recording that episode. That should probably be in a week because we're so late, but
yeah, the good thing about Soft Porn Adventure won't, you know, it's a game that there's stuff to talk about for sure. But normally when we have two games, I always worry that we're going to be sitting here for 6 hours. But I think with Tapper, they're actually a perfect combination for a reasonable size podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess... well, for my money at least, the episode is primarily about Soft Porn Adventure because that was the text adventure game we wanted to play. And then Tabo was just to have some an arcade game, a skill-based game to have fun with as well, right?
Yeah.
Hmm?
And we won't reveal it now, but we've got a lovely theme lined up for December, haven't we?
We do. We do.
We're going home.
Mm. Yeah, should be good.
Feels like.
Should be good. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So news-wise then.
Yes.
Couple of things that I picked out that I was going to talk about when we originally put the notes together for the Maximo episode for the end of October. The one thing that had just been announced then and keeping on theme was the Evercade VS had been delayed.
Mm.
So it was announced mid last month that it was originally due to be shipped before the end of November. It's now been pushed back. So it's now, they're now looking to ship sometime before Christmas.
So if I pre-order, could I have one for Christmas?
Well, I don't know. Well, I assume not.
Okay.
Because I imagine there's limited stock.
Mm, that's too bad for them, really. I mean, that should have been a huge market for them.
Yeah, but you know, the fact that they are able to ship a product right now.
Oh yeah, that's impressive in itself.
I mean, where's the analog pocket? You know, analog.
Where's the bloody PS5?
where's the PS5? Can you buy an Xbox Series X this Christmas? Absolutely not.
Nope.
So the fact that these guys are getting stuff into the hands, and you know, the product is there, and it has annoyed a few people, the fact that YouTubers are sitting there reviewing Evercade VS units, but way of the world, I suppose.
So weird.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, c'est la vie. If you're in North America, you're not going to get yours until January.
Okay.
So that's a shame. Mm. But, you know, it's like the Steam Deck, isn't it? You know, which is another thing I was going to mention.
Yeah, that was postponed as well.
Yeah, but it's fine. Mm. It's all right, isn't it? Fine. We don't need... I'm quite looking forward to getting the Steam Deck. You know, I'm like you, I've stuck my pound down to get on the list.
Yes.
Thinking...
For the largest version as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I went all in.
And you know, I was thinking to myself, I probably won't buy it. Now it's getting closer. I'm thinking I'll probably remortgage the house to get one.
Yeah.
No problem.
So I know what's going to happen with mine. I'm 99% sure. My oldest daughter is 18 now, and she's planning how she can move out and finding a place to live and so on and so forth. And she's a huge gamer, and she's used to playing on my gaming PC in the living room and so on. My PS4, she hasn't got anything that's her own, right? So what's going to happen is that I'm going to get that Steam Deck. I'm going to play with it for a month, and then it's going to go with her because that'll be her gaming PC, I'm sure. I'll have to get her a dock as well so she can hook it up to her TV and get her an Xbox 360 controller that I can hopefully pair with it because she loves that controller, and then she'll be set.
You better get two.
Yeah, perhaps. Too expensive, mate.
One is too expensive, never mind two. But they do look great pieces of kit.
Yeah,
I'm not a big watcher of YouTube videos, but I am kind of every now and again I do a little search, and people who are getting hands on with prototype models, I mean, it looks great.
Yeah.
I've actually, one of the games I was going to play when we had this little hiatus at the end of the playthrough season, I was contemplating starting Banner Saga.
Okay.
Which is a strategy RPG. Mm. But then I thought to myself, do you know, actually, that would be the perfect game to play on the Steam Deck. It's on the Switch as well, but it's originally a PC game.
Mm.
But I thought that would be the perfect game to try out the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
So I'm actually holding off.
Okay.
Look how playthrough season 4. Mm. Perhaps. but yeah, that's been delayed as well. So that looks like now the front of the queue for the Steam Deck is February.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where I sit. I think in the
my
queue.
Email said March for me.
Okay.
I think so, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we got the same email, didn't we?
Yeah.
So I need to have a look. But I'm in no rush. Whatever.
Yeah, me neither.
In fact, to be honest, I mean, the longer it goes after Christmas, the better from a financial point of view.
Yes.
What else have we got? So we had some sad news, didn't we?
Yeah, we do.
Earlier this week, was it earlier this week that the news...
I think it was.
...was announced? So Bernie Drummond, designer of Head Over Heels and other games, but
Batman
possibly, which what? Yeah, Batman, of course.
Batman, yeah.
So he must have worked with John Ripman then. John Ripman was the coder for his designs, was it? Was that?
Could be. Yeah.
Was that the partnership? But it's very sad. Well known member of the development community from the 80s, the Speccy. It seems like more and more there's a lot going.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it? You know, these guys get older. It's going to happen.
Mm.
So it's very sad. So obviously thoughts and best wishes go out to Bernie's family. Feels like we've lost another one. So we can do our best to keep his legacy alive by playing the games he was associated with.
Yes.
And that's what we do on this podcast, is we keep these legacies going. So yeah, best wishes go to Bernie's family. In better news, Dean Swain tells me that Atari are manufacturing cartridges again.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Do you know why they're manufacturing cartridges?
Mate.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. So which games? New games or reprinting old games? Or what are we talking about here?
No, he sent me a link to... I mean, they must reprint something. It's Yars Return, right? So that was a game back in the '80s, wasn't it? Mm. Saboteur is another one, and Aquaventure. I think that's on the Evercade.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
So they're reprints.
Okay.
They're a lot of money. I'm just on the website now trying to. Okay, so these are unreleased editions, apparently,
mm-hmm.
of those three games.
Okay.
I don't know what editions they are and why they've never been released, because certainly Aquaventure got a commercial release, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yars Return, I'm sure it sure did. Surely that did. I don't know. We could be talking rubbish. These might be games that I've never seen a commercial release. But the limited edition of these games, you've got to have deep pockets, because they're $150 each.
Oh, God.
Now, I love the Atari 2600 because I love all video game systems, but whew, that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. So instead of spending $150, you could go spend £22 on a digital download copy of the Robert Keith Wonder, because that's been funded. Did you notice that?
Yeah, it did.
It's fully funded, and they're going.
Still got a few days
to
go.
Smashing through their stretch goals at the moment. I guess in a couple of minutes or a few hours at least, they will be at the 65K mark, which would add another 30 minutes of content. So already adding 90 minutes of extra content total. Once again?
What was their goal?
The goal was 35K, 35,000.
Okay, so they've done really well, haven't they?
Yeah, they're almost at 65,000 now.
They make good movies, though.
Oh, yeah, they do. They do.
Have you seen their others, the Bedroom to Billions series?
I've seen the Bedroom to Billions, the first one. I backed the Amiga years, and I'm not sure I ever got around to watch it because of time. But I've got it here somewhere. I should watch it. I've watched all of the extras because there were so many good extras for that Amiga.
This is an interview with Ron Gilbert on there.
Yeah, I've watched that, for example. So I've watched all of the extras, but I actually can't recall right now whether I actually watched the full 2.5 hour movie as well.
I've not seen the PlayStation 1. But I've got it, but I've not watched it.
Mate, I backed the PlayStation 1, but I've never downloaded it, so I probably, I don't know how to get my hands on it now.
Yeah, it's a bit embarrassing now.
Yes, as you mentioned it, I came to think of that film even existing. But I remember backing that, yes.
One of the interests, because they're really good. They are really good, but they are long. The main features, if you not including the extras, they are really long.
Yeah, and that kind of scares me off. That's why I haven't watched them, the last two, because, I mean, the
2.5 hours.
Time investment of 2.5 hours is just not going to happen for me. So
it's quite a long time, isn't it? I mean, it's every time I'm sitting there watching TV, I'm always thinking I could be playing something. So
it needs
to be it needs to catch me right in the right mood. And one of the interesting things when they were, because Dean obviously done the recent interview with them, which was really good. They one of the things they were saying is they were focused to keep the film, the main feature, to an hour and a half, and then load everything into the extras that people can just dip in and dip out.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And that seems sensible, actually,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Problem with these kind of films, I mean, I watch some films with the kids, but they're like, you don't need to watch everything. It doesn't matter that you're not really paying attention. This kind of stuff, you need to watch it. You need to listen to what they're saying.
It's a documentary.
Yeah, exactly. So 2.5 hours for that is just, it scares me away.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to watch them in bits. Mm. So I might watch, 20 minutes, half an hour, and then a little bit later that day I'll come back.
I'm no good at that.
Yeah, it's probably not the ideal way to watch something like that because they are really, really good. They're just long.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the interesting things they said in that interview is that they've got a C64 one in the pipeline as well. And, the Speccy, I think, is probably close to being flogged to death now, the old Speccy.
Oh, yeah.
So I think people need to start talking about the CPC and the C64.
Yes. Yeah, I mentioned that. I think that was probably in our private chat. Give me an Amstrad CPC movie. That'd be good.
Be good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't it? The underdog of the 8-bit wars.
Yes.
So I think there's plenty of stuff out there.
The MSX. I mean, give me something that's not Speccy and C64.
But we do love the Speccy, though, don't we?
Yes, you do. That's true.
Us British, us Brits.
Yes,
we do love our colour clash.
You like being the underdog.
It's the way we roll, you see.
Mm. That's good.
So I think that's it, mate. Anything else caught your eye over the past few weeks?
No, I think I'm good, mate. I'm ready to dive into Maximo.
Great. Mm. Should we thank our lovely patrons?
Let's do that. I'm just going to find the list here. Here we go.
We have our brand new list.
Yes. And it's not sorted in any way, so...
No.
Completely random list. Are you ready?
Do you want to go first?
Yes, I do.
Go on.
James Dunn.
Hans Crombane.
Raushi MSX.
Guto Threadbare.
Chris Atville.
Paul Bullard.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Ninjixel.
Ah, it's changed. Tim TJ Walker.
Andy Hudson.
Tim obviously got fed up with us taking the mickey out of his name, TJ. Ricardo Engel.
Adrian Nelson.
Heavy Metal Don, good old Donny. Yeah. He's been playing some Tapper.
Oh, yes, and whining about it being hard. James Bentley.
Tony Parkinson.
Gaz H.
Mal Woods.
Red Crested Breagle.
Richard Rogers.
The Kane and Rins Podcast.
Lampton Worm.
Salvio Calabrese.
Mitsuyama.
Rhys Wynn.
Clint Humphrey.
And Mark Bulon. I don't know why his name is always in all caps. I feel like I should shout it.
Stands out.
Yeah.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
John Shepherd.
Lawrence Giroux.
Deadlock.
Good old Deadlock. And Aaron Maupin, who's actually locked into my Minecraft server, so I like him.
Is anybody else?
Nobody else wants to play with me, but Maupin's actually using it.
I'll log in.
I don't want any pity logins. No pity logins here.
Jim Orbitz IT.
John Veal. Who I really Thomas don't like Goffin. At the moment because he's I think he just beat me at Tapper, didn't he? He's just oh
yeah, and you yeah. and you know that's his one sole aim yes. for the month is
I'm
to
gonna
beat
have
you.
To get back into it.
Thomas Scoffham.
Andy Marsh.
Patrick First.
It just says Lauren. Sorry.
I think that's Lauren De Bruyne?
Yeah, it must be.
Who is in our Discord? Andy Gilmore.
Steven Stoddard.
Matt Sullivan.
Magnus Espiona.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Niggles.
And Blake Brett.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you so much. It's always appreciated. It is. Thank you. And if you want to join that very, very exclusive list of wonderful people and podcasts, you can go to www.patreon.com and search for Retro Asylum. And anything that you can give, it goes to hosting fees, equipment, anything that we need for running the podcast. And if we don't need anything, it just sits there until we do. So we are very grateful for anything that people can give that allows us to continue this wonderful endeavor.
Yep, indeed. Indeed.
Maximo, mate.
Maximo, yes. So should we remind ourselves what we were voting on, actually?
So we were voting on Way of the Samurai, yes. which was that cool... samurai game you were talking about. Mm. Contra Shattered Soldier.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. And then Hot Shots Golf 4 or Everybody's Golf, yeah, depending on where you are in the world.
So four great titles. I would have loved to play all of those.
And can you remember how many votes we had, Matt?
No.
Of course you can't, because it was after 2 hours of talking about Xenogears. Mm. We had 91 votes in total, and... I will read out the results. Way of the Samurai got 11 votes. Contra got 14 votes. Hot Shots Golf got 26. And the resounding winner was Maximo with 44% approximately of the vote.
Yeah.
So it was a popular choice.
Yep, it was indeed.
It was the game that people wanted to play.
Yep.
And play it we did. So I've been doing a little bit of research of the history. Shall I go into a bit of that? Just a little bit of background?
Yeah, take it away, mate.
So the game was the concept was created by principally guys called David Siller and Mark Rogers. They had worked on a variety of games, long-standing games industry members. But principally, they're probably best known for their work on the Crash Bandicoot series.
Mm.
So they had a really strong pedigree. I think from what I read, David Siller was the real guy behind the original concept of Maximo. And he'd come from, as I said, the Crash Bandicoot history. So they joined Capcom and they pitched a game. They'd also done the Saturn arcade port of Final Fight Revenge, which was absolutely trounced critically. So I've never played it. Roushi actually said on Discord during the month that he didn't think it was too bad.
Okay.
But if you read reviews of that port of Final Fight Revenge, it gets pretty slammed.
Yeah, okay.
But Capcom obviously seen something that they like, because when they pitched this idea of having a sort of arcade adventure, which was originally to be inspired by Onimusha. Have you ever played the Capcom game Onimusha, which is Resident Evil with samurai? So they were inspired by that. It was intended to be a much more serious game at first. When they pitched it to Capcom, it was actually the Japanese bosses at Capcom who suggested that they put it in the Ghosts and Goblins world. So it wasn't from off the bat. It wasn't actually intended to be something that was set in the Ghosts and Goblins universe. It was just intended to be an action-adventure game.
Yeah, okay.
Which, when you think now, there probably isn't a huge amount of callbacks to the earlier arcade games, I wouldn't have said.
There's a lot of callback to Ghosts and Goblins when you actually get into the game itself.
Yeah, there's the music and there's the main sprite in the way he loses his armor. But actually, when you look at the enemies and...
True.
I don't know.
Yeah, true.
I think you can see how it would have started life as something that wasn't a Ghosts and Goblins game.
It's got this whole Halloween-y theme to it, of course, like Ghosts and Goblins does as well, to all of the enemy designs as well. So of course, we're battling skeletons and zombies and so on. But you're right. You're right. This could easily be reskinned as something completely else. But this, the little fact that the soundtrack was different variations of the title music for Ghosts and Goblins made me far more happy than it should have. It's weird, but sometimes those nostalgia neurons just start firing in your head. And even though I play this game a lot and I died a lot, so I should have been very, very angry with it at some stages. Every time I booted up and I heard that melody, I was just going, okay.
Yeah, it never gets old.
No, it's beautiful. I loved it. And another thing, this was released in 2001. The PlayStation 2 itself was released in 2000. So this is an early title in the PlayStation's lifespan. What an early title, mate. I mean, this is amazing. A brilliant game. It, not sure about you. I played it on real hardware. I never think I saw any frame stutters or anything like that. It performs brilliantly. It looks like a modern game. I mean, to me at least. I played it on my CRT, and let me just say, this is one of those games from that generation that actually needs to be played on the CRT, because I did play it on an LCD in the cottage as well, and that doesn't look too good. But play it on a CRT, it looks brilliant. It's such a tour de force of what the PlayStation 2 is capable of.
Yeah, I mean, it's technically good, but really, for me, what set it apart was just the wonderful art direction. Mm. You know, from the character, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the amazing little touches of the animation, to the absolutely incredible character design by, and I want to get this guy's name right because this is important to the feel of the game. Susumu Matsushita.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very famous manga artist and an anime artist. Yep. He was actually brought into the project by one of the Japanese executives of Capcom, Yoshiki Okamoto, to work alongside Silla and Rogers on the game, and they would describe what they intended for the main character and some of the baddies, and he would go away and produce some art and say, look, well, what do you think of this, guys? And they might say, well, look, that's great, but his hair there is going to be really difficult to animate, so can we just change it? And it's quite interesting. I mean, some of the interviews that Rogers and Silla have given over the years, which they talk about how they, because Matsushita wasn't a gamer. And he wasn't really, he wasn't really drawing with games in mind. He was just drawing characters and concept environment art. And they were saying, yeah, that looks really good, but you try coding a character that looks like that.
Yeah, could be a challenge.
It's like where art meets technology, yeah. But the end result is incredible.
And this game is the full package. We just mentioned the music and the graphics and the character design, but gameplay is brilliant as well. I mean, this is a game that is hard as nails, but you can feel yourself getting better with every single playthrough, and you learn the levels, and it's definitely beatable. I beat it on real hardware, no problems really.
Yeah.
Well, not no problems, but I did it, and I'm no hardcore gamer in that way. So
Silla said that he intended right from the start, and he can come across, and if he's listening to this, apologies, Mr. Silla, I suspect you're not, so I'll just go for it. He can come across as a little arrogant with this stuff. Mm. So it was very much the intention to make something which he considered was a throwback to earlier styles of gameplay, where you would have to concentrate and where you would be punished for making mistakes. Mm-hmm. There are some pretty tiresome quotes from him where he says things like, if you've grown soft or you're used to playing modern games, don't bother playing my game. You know, it's only for hardcore gamers. Mm.
So he's of the get good religion.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a bit of gatekeeping going on there, which it's just a bit tiresome. Because actually, and we'll come on to this when we talk about the gameplay, it's actually not that hard if you practice a little bit and take your time.
Yeah. Learn how to approach the different enemies and so on and so forth. But we'll get into that. Before we do that, let's have a short break and I'll just go check on my kids.
Oh no, I'm too late.
Missed the boat on a game? Don't worry. The Playthrough Podcast are bringing it back. Cruise over to the website at playthroughpod.com for episodes and links to our Discord, Twitter and more. Play along with Playthrough and be part of the conversation.
So before we get into some of the nitty-gritty, mate, just remind me then, so you had played this back in the day, but not very much,
is
that right?
Never heard of it.
Oh, really? Yeah. At all?
Not at all.
You must have heard of it.
Nope, never heard of it at all. I'm on my PlayStation 2. So I was still a PC gamer at that point in time. I still am, I guess. But I wasn't following along with what was coming out for the PS2 that much. So I've been playing all of the heavy hitters like the Grand Theft Auto 3 or Vice City and big Jack and Daxter. Price. I loved Jack and Daxter. Ratchet and Clank as well. Loved that series as well. But never ever saw Maximal. No.
Yeah, and you know what? It's fair to say as well that the game didn't get masses of hype because of the rather checkered immediate history of this studio, which is a little unfair when you think that the guys had worked on and produced Jack and Daxter.
Mm,
Crash Bandicoot. Yeah. Sorry. But I think their previous couple of games were sketchy.
Okay.
So it didn't get, because I read a couple of previews, I went on and found a couple of previews, and actually there was a little bit of trepidation about recommending it, despite the fact it looked so amazing.
Yeah, okay.
So in some ways, it was one of those that was a little easy to miss.
Yeah.
And Maximo, there's no obvious link there in the name. If you just heard the name, you wouldn't think, well, that's set in the Ghosts and Goblins universe, which may have pulled people in as well.
But funny thing is, though, if you look at the reviews from back in the day, I mean, there are some really, really good scores there.
Oh, the reviews were good. It was the previews that were a little bit nervous about it.
Okay.
But the critical reception was really good. Yes. Once it came out, people realized this was something special.
Yeah.
It was beforehand. So it was one of those games that probably was easy to miss.
Yeah. I mean, I should have seen it somewhere in a store or something. But, I mean, as you say, had it set Ghosts and Goblins, Maximo. I would probably have looked up and said, okay, what's this? But it just says Maximo goes to glory. Probably didn't consider it, I guess.
So I did know it was set in the Ghosts and Goblins world, and I did play it back in the day.
Okay.
But back then, I'd missed, because I'm a little younger, I'd largely, by and large,
he likes to say this, listeners, every single episode. Chris, everybody, Chris is 3 years younger than me, so let it be known, he's younger.
But
he's a little younger.
But those 3 years, they're important, aren't they? Because it's the difference between actually playing Ghosts and Goblins in the arcades and not. You know, it is true, though, isn't it?
Could be.
Because when I was, you know, when I was going to the arcades, it was Final Fight, it was Moonwalker, it was those late 80s, early 90s games that I really remember playing.
Yeah.
Not the games that came out in the mid-80s. So those actually, a couple of years, did make a big difference.
Yeah.
I played this, I had it, and I remember just not getting into it, finding it really difficult, turning it off.
Yep.
And this game you will bounce off if you are expecting something you're just going to breeze through, because it's hard from moment one.
Oh, yeah, you're going to die in the very first level if you don't know what you're going into.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, I'd be surprised if you didn't die in the first level at least once.
Oh, yes.
And we both played on real hardware, didn't we?
Yeah,
I did as well. I played the NTSC version of the game on real hardware with a CRT, and it was, pretty cracking.
Yeah, so I actually don't have this game. I played it with a, what's it called, Free McBoot card?
Okay, yeah. You got that going,
Yeah,
did
I got
you?
That going in my slim model just to try it out. And loading it from a USB stick, it was quite nice. So I'm definitely going to see if I can find a copy of this.
Before people label us pirates and criticize us, it is impossible right now to buy this game, which is an absolute shocking crime on the part of Capcom. Yeah. You cannot, as far as I'm aware, and I'd happily be corrected, and if I am wrong, I will go out and buy it as soon as I know on whatever platform I can get my hands on. But you can't buy this game right now. There is no legal way to play Maximo, as far as I'm aware.
No. I'm definitely going to track down a copy for the PlayStation 2. So.
Yeah. It's about £40 on eBay.
Okay.
There or thereabouts.
Yeah.
It has got a story.
Yes, it's got a story. Yes. You want me to read it?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. So the story is quite simple. So Maximo, he's a knight, and he thinks he's found a trustworthy assistant in the likes of Achilles. But Achilles turns out to actually be a villain. He takes over control of Maximo's kingdom and kills Maximo, actually. And now the land is in trouble, of course. But somebody helps Maximo, doesn't he? The Grim Reaper. He's so cute.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
I like him.
Yeah.
So the Grim Reaper brings Maximo back to life. He gives him one of these coins and says, as long as you have these coins, I'll keep bringing you back to life. And these coins are your continue mechanism in the game, of course. And he explains that the Grim Reaper explains that Achilles has been using a drill to harvest the dead from the underworld to create his undead army. And of course, the Grim Reaper can't have this, because now he's destroying his underworld and taking his dead, his souls. So he enters a contract with Maximo that he'll be kept alive as long as he has this death coin. And he then has to help him defeat Achilles, right?
Yeah.
Am I correct in that?
That's it. Yeah, that is essentially the plot of the whole game. Yes. And our task is to go and rescue the four princesses.
Oh, yes. And actually, Achilles has taken the Maximo's girl as well. I forget what her name is.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The ultimate princess.
So you need to go rescue your girl and free your kingdom and help the Grim Reaper get all his debts back into the underworld.
There are four princesses, though, dotted around, aren't they? There's one in each world.
Quite voluptuous ones as well.
They are brilliantly designed by Matsushita Sam.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Lenore,
top heavy.
Mamba Marie, Aurora Lee, and Stephanie.
Yes. And whenever you beat a boss, you'll free one of these girls, and you can choose to save the game or get... I forget what the other one is. Or get a kiss from this girl.
Or you can have your health replenished.
Oh, that's it. And if you choose to get a kiss, I did that the first couple of times and thought, that's going to give me something special. But it does nothing, as far as I can tell.
It unlocks a concept art gallery.
Exactly. If you get all four kisses, you unlock a concept art gallery. And please, unless you're really good at this game, don't choose that. Because... No. You want to save because the first level in every world is always the toughest.
Yes.
And then you'll fight the boss, you'll defeat him, and then you'll die, and then you'll have to fight the boss again.
Yes.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. YouTube exists, people. It's 2021.
Yes.
If you want to see that concept art, YouTube does exist. And it's very, very pretty and very nice. I love concept art. But I very quickly abandoned the kisses. I got the first one.
Yeah, okay.
And then from then on, it was saving.
I think I got the first one. Then I got the second one and died in the first level a couple of times until you told me that it's only going to unlock a concept art gallery. And
oh, no!
Then I chose to save instead.
I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we just talk about the way the game is structured before we get into some of the levels and
some
of the gameplay? So you open up onto a beautiful title screen. I love the title screen of Maximo. It looks so good with Maximo in the middle, and he's surrounded by a load of tombstones. So you start off by selecting a save file. Now, this is important because I like to have multiple saves, rolling saves in my games.
Okay.
You can't do that with this because you only have one save file per game.
Yes.
So that means that you can't really save scum by having a separate save file at the start of every world.
Nope.
And it gives you a percentage rate of completion as you go through.
Oh, yeah.
So it tells you what percentage of the secrets you've found in the whole game and what percentage of the levels you've completed. You access each of the worlds, and we'll go through them in a second and talk about some of our favourites. But each world is its own hub level. Now, normally when you get to a hub, you expect to see a beautiful, nicely designed little hub where you can have some fun in a bit of a sandbox. There's no enemies, nothing to bother you.
No. These hub worlds, they'll kill you.
They will kill you. And they can kill you. You've got to be so careful navigating around these hubs. From these hubs are the spokes that lead to the various levels, five levels in each of the worlds. And then you have a boss, which once you defeat the boss, you can then access then the next world.
Yeah, and actually, you don't start a world in the hub level. You start with level one. And that's a tough level, and you need to beat that, and then you enter the hub.
Yes. Yes, that's right. So, for instance, if you've beaten Ghastly Gus, who is the boss of the Boneyard, the very first world, you are immediately then plunged into level one of the next world, which is the Great Dank. So before you can save again, if you don't choose to save after the boss, you then have to play through the first level of the next world before you can get to the hub in which you can save. And the problem is, each of the worlds introduce slightly new mechanics, but more importantly, new enemies that you've got to figure out the attack patterns on the fly. So it's always the hardest level in each of the worlds while you're trying to figure out the enemies and how they attack. So it's the level that will punish you the hardest, and it's the first one, and you won't have saved. If you're sensible, you'll have saved immediately before you fight the boss.
No.
If you
defeat the boss, you can save there.
Well, you can.
But if you choose the kiss or the health upgrade, you're in for trouble.
Yeah. Now, the way save games and continues work in this game is either a great system or a point of massive contention, depending on your perspective.
It's brilliant.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
But I know some of our listeners and Discord members struggle with it a little bit. So to save your game, it costs you 100 coins, regular coins. You get regular coins from defeating enemies, opening chests. They're just dotted around the world. They're hidden in secrets. And there are multiple ways to get coins.
Yep.
And it costs 100 coins to save your game. Now, there are also power-ups throughout the game that you can pick up and you can spend your coins on. You can get different boxes, but when your health is reduced, you end up in just your underpants.
Yep.
You can get different style boxes. You can replenish your health from time to time with your coins. You can buy armor.
Yes. I think that's exclusively what I bought. I'd only buy stuff when it was armor. And the rest of the time, I'd just be saving up to those 100 coins, and then I'd be saving at the hub world for every single level.
Exactly. Mm. And that's the way to do it.
Whenever now, I beat a level, I'd be so happy, and I'd be running through the hub world to get to the save point and then throw in my 100 coins.
Exactly the same. But I think people on Discord got cross because the fact that you had to spend your coins to save meant that you couldn't buy the power-ups. Mm. Well, there wasn't anything else to spend your coins on.
No, the power-ups you could buy would normally be stuff that you could also find in chests level in secrets. And see, there's lots and lots of secrets in these levels as well. So it would normally be stuff you could find anyway. So it would only give you an easier way through a level, for example, by getting it early or getting an extra armor, as you said, or something like that. So you didn't need to buy anything, really.
No. What it did, though, it made every single coin really valuable.
Yep.
And that's the beauty of the design of this game and the way the save system works. That if you're towards the end of a level, and there are plenty of coins in the level.
Yes.
You don't need to worry too much. But if you're in a level and you've got fewer than 100 coins, I was stressing.
So I don't think I ever finished a level without having the 100 points to save.
No. I mean, you would have to literally run through without killing anything.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm not sure that's possible because you would very quickly get overwhelmed.
Yes. And that's not the way to play this game. This game is, as I said, chock full with secrets and stuff you want to explore. And also it would be very, very hard. I mean, the enemies, you need to approach most of them quite carefully. So don't run through this game.
No. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's there to be explored.
Yeah.
But if you play it in that way and you save after every level, you really don't have to worry about the save system too much. You'll always have enough coins.
Yep.
Now, the continues work slightly differently. So as Mads has alluded to earlier, you need a death coin.
Mm.
You need to spend, if you lose all your lives, and I never used a continue. So it didn't ever run out of lives.
You never used a continue?
No. Nope.
Seriously?
No, I'll tell you why in a second. Okay. It's not that I'm brilliant, but I just played it in a particular way, which meant I never lost all my lives. I never used a continue. But if you use a continue, it costs you a death coin to continue.
Yeah, now, well, it does the first time. And the second time, and maybe the third time, and then it costs 2 coins, and then it costs 3 coins. Yeah, yes. So I know that that's because I did so use one, the continues. So I still had a handful of death coins, maybe 7 or 8 left when I finished the game. But I played it in that way with the continues because, for example, when I was in the middle of a boss fight, I didn't want to wait for reloading a save game and running back into the boss fight. I'll just say continue and try once more.
Yeah.
So
how many death coins? So how many did you get to the point where you had to spend more than one death coin to continue?
Yeah, I got to the point where I had to spend 3.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You quite quickly get there, actually.
So were you starting to worry?
Yeah, at some point I was, actually, because some of these... Well, boss fights could be quite hard to figure out, and I think maybe I continued once or twice in some of the... I actually only ever used continues in boss fights because in a level, if you'd use a continue, you'd start from the beginning anyway. You couldn't continue from mid-level checkpoints. You'd start from the very beginning of the level.
So
you might as well just load a save game instead. Because as I said, I've saved after every level anyway. So I have only used it at boss fights. So no, I don't think I was that concerned. No.
So that's the way I played it. So if on a level, and this did test me in the underworld world, but if on a level I lost, say, more than 2 lives, I would quit out and reload.
Okay.
Or I would use my first run through a level as practice, getting used to where the enemies were, practicing on the strategies for defeating each of the enemies, and then I would say, right, okay, well, I'll burn through a few lives, reload, and I'll go back and then do it properly. And in that way, I think I ended the game with about 11 lives.
So I like the feeling of just making it. So I would never do that. I would never just, if I lost a couple of lives in a level and I still made it, that's the run I want to save.
Yeah, so, okay.
But
slightly different strategies.
Yeah.
But there were some levels later on where I couldn't face going back through them, and we'll come on to levels in a minute. And that was there were some levels which I thought, you know what, I'll just accept the fact. I think at one point I got down to having two lives.
Yes.
And then I slowly built them back up again.
Okay.
But I ended up with quite a lot of lives in the end.
Hmm.
You get death coins by smashing various. There are, in each of the worlds, there are like lamps or lanterns.
Graves.
That you can destroy. Grave tombstones in the first world, of course. And then you if you smash them, you get they release souls.
Yep.
Call forward, maybe. Release dark souls that you absorb, and for every 50 of those souls you get a death coin. But again, it gives value to these things which in other games are just rather meaningless collectibles.
Yep.
Because you want to, if there's a tombstone, you want to go and get it. Because you want those souls.
I like the fact that the ghosts were trying to take away the souls as well. So you could pick these souls up, but then the ghosts would come.
Yeah.
And they couldn't hurt you, but they could steal the souls. So they'd just fly right through you if you didn't hit them at the right point in time.
Yeah.
And they'd steal a couple of souls, 5-6 souls. You need to try to catch them again. And another thing I like, and that's typical for this game was trying to kill you at every step along the way. Those souls, when you're in the first level, it's not a problem. As soon as you're as soon as you're in the second world and onwards, those souls would always be in a position so that when you struck the whatever lantern or whatever it was and you released five souls, either you had to be very, very quick or one or two of them would be so far away over a ledge that you'd kill yourself trying to reach them. I loved that.
The amount of times I did
me
that.
Too. brilliant design.
Stretched. Yeah. And then you can obviously get a power up to your shield, which if you throw your shield, it absorbs them. It sucks them in.
Yes. I didn't notice that until later on. And then all of those times I've died trying to reach a soul, I could have just thrown my shield.
But the beauty of the design is that it will always tantalize you with a tombstone or something which it looks difficult to get, an extra life.
The extra lives are always, I mean, they're dangling them in front of you. But hey, see, there's a
you go the hard way.
There's a ledge here. There's a pit. You'll die, and then there's this tiny little 5 pixel you can land on.
Yeah,
but there's an extra life here. Come on, take it.
Exactly.
Take it.
Yeah.
You don't dare.
Yeah.
I would always go for those
really
because
beautiful.
It couldn't fail. If you'd always, they designed it so that you would at least reach the extra life. Maybe then you'd die, but you'd have lost nothing because you just got an extra life. So I would always try those.
No, me too. Well, then they wouldn't be there the second time.
No, exactly.
But then on that first time through, then you would all, it's always worth going for it because you're generally, it's always easy. It's always more difficult getting back once you've got the power up. But you don't have to do it. I mean, the beauty of the design on pretty much all of these levels is that you can take the path of least resistance, not go for the hard to reach extra lives. Mm. And okay, you just leave them, but there's an easier path over there.
Yep.
It's up to you. It's risk and reward, but there's so much pleasure to be had for knowing that you took the hardest path and getting through it. It's so, so, so good. Let's dive into some of the levels then. So the first world is the Boneyard.
Okay, let's do that.
The first world is the Boneyard, which is probably the one that most people have seen the most because a lot of people probably don't get beyond the Boneyard.
The first world is the Boneyard, right?
Yeah, the first world
is the Boneyard. We start in Grave Danger, I think it's called.
That's right. Mm. Yeah. There's a few levels here. I mean, I've got really nothing much to say about any of them in particular, other than to say that the Boneyard is probably my favourite world of all.
Really? Okay.
Probably.
So I think I liked all of the worlds, but some just at the end, not the... Maybe it's actually the very last world, or maybe it's the... Yeah, it must be the very last world where you get the level, for example, where you jump onto a pirate ship that's rotating and...
Yes, that's in the frozen waste.
There's a lot of brilliant design in Castle Maximo.
Yeah.
So I really
is
like
that called Cannonball Run? I think it is, isn't it? That level.
Yeah, I think you're
I think in the frozen waste, I think it is. Oh, that's brilliant. Mm. I mean, that is very memorable. The Frozen Waste
that's
generally
the frozen
with
waste, of course, yes. Okay.
That's the third world, yeah. So the Boneyard is the one that probably feels most like Ghosts and Goblins, to be honest.
Yep, you're right.
In that it's kind of scary forests and most of them have, they all have skeletons in some way, shape or form. But it's the one that felt more, the most traditional and authentic Ghosts and Goblins world. The boss there is a kiddie called Ghastly Gus.
Yep.
Who is a big oaf whose toes are sticking out of his boots, bless him. And to beat Ghastly Gus, you have to use your attack, which allows you to sort of jump and stab down with your sword.
You double jump and press triangle.
Triangle? That's right.
You'll stab your sword into the earth and shatter the earth. Yeah,
and you do a couple of those on his feet and he hops around and you give him a few whacks and he goes down. One of the complaints I have with the game is the bosses actually have plenty of character. And, you know, like Ghastly Gus with his toes sticking out of his broken boots because his boots are too small for him is really, really... I mean, there's loads of charm there. But given how tense the game is, and how difficult it can be, and how you're constantly just having to concentrate 100%. One mistake and you will lose a life. Mm. The bosses just felt, by comparison, just really simple. And I didn't ever really feel challenged by any of them.
I'll have to disagree. I agree with Ghastly Gus. It was obvious from the get-go what you needed to do there, but there were some boss fights where it took me a lot of figuring out what was actually going on before I knew how to beat them. But you're right, once you know how to beat them, it's not too hard to do. I mean, strafe around them, avoid their attack patterns, and then go for that kill that you know how to do. But yeah, there were some bosses. So which one is it? Is it Lord Glutterscum that actually has this shield around him that changes colors? And the color tells you which kind of attack he's vulnerable to right now. Sometimes he's vulnerable to a shield hit, and sometimes he's vulnerable to your double jump and triangle dash attack.
Glutterscum was the one, the fat one that you had to hit in the butt. So you had to strafe around him, which was really, really simple. You had to just strafe around him, and then when he'd shoot fire at you... was it the second one? Bokor Labas is the boss of the Great Dank. It may have been him. I feel like I killed him completely just by luck on the very first go.
I forget. I don't think it was the second one, but I forget right now. It's been too long since I played this. That's because we're late in recording this. But
it may have even been the boss right at the end of Casa Maxima.
Yeah, it could be actually before the Demon Queen.
Before the final
probably,
boss.
Probably.
It could have been.
I think after the first two bosses, I felt the same as you say right now. The bosses are too easy compared to the rest of the game. But I really enjoyed even those two easy bosses, just figuring out what you needed to do and then performing it. And some of the later bosses, I'd lose a handful of lives there trying to get through that at least.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that the levels and the worlds are a little by the numbers. Mm. You know, you've got the Boneyard, you've got the Frozen one, you've got the Lava one, you've got the Spirit Realm.
You've got the Swamp as well.
You've got this kind of swampy one, which is the Great Dank, isn't it? So the Spirit Realm is the one, the Underworld, the Lava. So you could argue they're pretty much formulaic. Yeah, let's have an ice world, but there's so much character dotted around each of the worlds, and there's enough variety in the enemy types in each of the worlds as well, that just makes each world feel very individual and full of character.
And the design of, I mean, there's not a bad level here. Every single level has been designed to the tiniest detail. And this is a real 3D platformer. It uses all three dimensions. You're not just running around, you're jumping on top of things there. This really, really clever use of the third dimension, of the height. I mean, reaching different parts. Even some levels, you can skip through parts by finding a convoluted way of getting on top of a building and jumping onto some ledge and following that ledge around. Yeah. And I mean, from the very first level and onwards, the level design here is just brilliant. And it's one of the very, very best 3D platformers I've ever played because of that. I mean, it rivals Mario 64, which is really good in that regard as well.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely does. There's multiple routes through the levels. There's always bits that you know you could get to, but it just feels a bit too risky, so you don't. Yeah. And then you see the percentage at the end, which may only be 76%, and you think, ah, if I'd just gone that way, I could have, who knows what could have been there. So, yeah, I didn't go back here, but it's very replayable in that way. Yes. You could comb through these levels, but the critical path through the levels as well, the enemy placements are so, so carefully designed to be tough, but never unfair. Yeah,
true. And you need to learn, as you said, how to approach every single enemy type. You have a shield.
One by one.
You have
one.
A sword. The shield can defend you. The shield can be used as a weapon as well. You can throw it. You can you can dodge, and you can strike while you're dodged, which becomes important sometimes. And you can jump, and you can do your double jump, and you can shake the earth. There's all these different moves, and you need them all to get through this game.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant, brilliant game design from A to C, isn't it?
Every enemy has its weakness. Every enemy will attack in a pattern. Yep. And part of the challenge as you go into each world is figuring out, right, okay, this is a new enemy. Well, how do I kill it? You know, the grenade guys who pop in, I think, from world 3.
The zombies with the piranhas caught onto them, for example. Yeah. They were quite hard to figure out for me.
Yeah. So with them, if you go and whack them, they only take one hit, but if you do that, they'll explode and they'll hurt you. And this is not a game. Every single point of health matters.
Yes.
Because you might only have two bars of health, and each bar, it's not quite as brutal as Ghosts and Goblins, because if each bar of health will take three hits to completely eliminate. So it's not quite as brutal, but you do not want to be given those health points away.
No.
I mean, they are valuable. Mm. You do not want to be giving them away at all.
Yeah.
There is an elephant in the room that we have to address. In fact, there are two. Before we do that, shall we let Muppets Fool tell us what he thought of Maximum?
Yes, let's do so, mate.
Hi there, this is Hans on the Discord server known as Muppets Fool. This is my first audio clip I've sent in for the Game Club. Been on and off in the past, but really into it since a few months. I voted for Maximo. For as long as I know, I've been fiddling with emulators, and I remember the first emulator for NES that I had on my 486, and it blew my mind that you could play consoles on a PC. When the PS2 emulator was announced, I was hyped, and as soon as it came out, I tried some games with it. Maximo must have been one of them, because with every update the emulator I received, I fired it up to see what the new version brought. And I never played it beyond the first level. I'm a great starter, not so much a finisher. That's why I like the Game Club so much. It's the way and the only way I think I can focus and finally finish games. And I just did that. After killing Achilles, I was in for a surprise. The emulator has gone a long way since the first versions. I have played on a 4K scaling resolution with high frame rates. The original game is beautiful by itself, with a very distinctive art style that I really like. The game is also very hard, and that won me over to go for the emulator route. Thank God for the save states. Without it, I would have never come so far. I really enjoyed my hours with the game. The controls are not overly complicated, and jumping becomes second nature really fast. I like that most enemies have different ways to kill them. I wouldn't have minded if there was a wider variety of enemies. Throughout the game, the same skeletons keep appearing. The bosses were very good too, nicely designed and not too hard to kill if you found out how and where to hit them. Lord S was very clear as where he wanted you to hit him. To be short, I had a blast. Thank guys for the awesome podcast and Roushi for his fine selection of PS2 games. Till next time.
So that was Hans. Thanks a lot for your clip, mate. I'm glad you got through the game, even though you were cheating and using save states. But that's okay.
Whatever it takes
to get through the game. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm sure if I had been playing this on an emulator, I'd been very, very tempted by those save states as well.
Yeah, I would have, but you know, I don't begrudge anyone for using save states because this is a game that you just got to experience and play however you want to play it. But the real enjoyment comes from the tension and then getting through the levels when you feel really, really tense. Yep. I think if you take away that jeopardy and that sense of danger, maybe it loses something.
It would lose a bit for me, at least. I mean, that most levels, I would probably be getting through them on my fifth try or something like that. So yeah. so it felt as if I had something invested when I finally got through there. So
definitely. Yeah, definitely. And I think as you get further on in the game as well, you do, I did find it getting, not, I wouldn't say easier, but I think you get into the flow of the game. You figure out,
when you get into the controls.
Really slow.
Yeah, actually, let's talk about those now, because that is such an important part of this game. The whole battle mechanics. So Maximo has a shield and a sword, and that's it really. And then he can get different power-ups. So very early on, and most of the time, you'll get a power-up that makes you able to throw your shield, and it'll return like a boomerang. So you just throw it for a short distance, and it'll hit something and return to you again. And with these skills, you're supposed to be able to get through skeletons, skeleton guards with long halberds. Is that what they're called? Those long shields. Bombardier skeletons, like skeletons holding bombs that they'll throw at you. Different kinds of sword-wielding skeletons. They're the blue ones and the red ones, and they have different skills.
Yeah, some of them are more difficult, aren't they? Some of them have shields. Yep. Some of them are more powerful, stronger shields.
You can block when they're attacking, and sometimes blocking with the shield will knock them out for a little while, and you can get an attack in. And you have zombies, but you also have zombies that have no legs, and you need to attack them in another way. And sometimes when you attack a zombie, they'll turn into a zombie without legs, and you'll need to...
The first time you see that is really disconcerting. Yes.
You have these ghosts, and I've already mentioned those. They don't hurt you, actually, but they steal those souls that you picked up.
But the green ones later on hurt you, don't they?
Yes, those poltergeists, I think they're called.
Yeah.
They
take your health.
Really, really annoying ravens. Again, they don't hurt you unless they push you over a ledge, because they will give you a bit of a knockback. But they steal your money.
That's right.
And that's no good.
Yeah.
You have these wizards as well.
Oh, they're horrible, these things.
Do they pop out of a coffin or something like that?
Yeah, they pop out of a chest.
Ah, chest, yes. And then they send this green ball of whatever, and it turns you into an old man or a baby.
Or a baby.
Yeah. And that when you're an old man or a baby, you can't really do anything. You just need to try to... To run away from the other enemies, because there will always be other enemies while there's a wizard
of
as
course.
Well.
Yeah.
We have these chests that turn out to be not treasure chests, but mimics. That try to eat you as soon as you try to open it. And then
think luggage from Terry Pratchett, only much more vicious.
Yes. Well, that's not possible, I think. More vicious than luggage, but luggage has a lot of lives in its and its conscience. But those are your main enemy types. And skeletons, you can just attack. Regular skeletons. Just bash those.
Yeah, they're fodder.
If you get to the guardian skeletons, they have quite a long range. So you need to be a bit more careful. Maybe use your shield. But the really interesting stuff becomes when you get to stuff like the bombardier skeletons. Because if you go up, you try to avoid the bombs. They throw bombs. Yeah. If the bombs hit you, they explode immediately. If they are just lying next to you, they'll have a counter from 5 seconds and count down to zero, and then they'll explode. And they have quite a long range, actually, so you need to be out of their range when they explode. But you learn how to avoid those bombs and run up to these bombardier skeletons. But if you hit them, you'll hit them while they're holding a bomb, and that'll explode and hurt you. And as you said, Chris, you need to conserve energy in this game, because that there is only that much energy to work with, and that's what you need to use for the entire level. So, you need to be careful. So what you need to do here is crouch and use your sword to cut off their legs.
Yeah.
And then they'll be lying there screaming because they can't get rid of the bomb, and you can just run away from them, and they'll be killed by their own bomb. I love that.
It took me the longest time to figure out that you could do that.
Me too.
I was throwing the shield at them, but your shield has a health rating in itself.
Yeah, so you can throw it like 8 or 10 times, I think.
And if you do it too much, then you lose the shield.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is not a place you want to be in. So I was really saving my shield for the bomb skeletons.
Yeah.
But of course, you have to get quite close to them to be able to throw the shield at them, which means that you're in range of their bite.
Yeah.
There is always more than one way to defeat these. That's the beauty of these things as well. There's always an optimum strategy, and then there's a suboptimum strategy.
Yeah.
Which there's always more than one. And generally, the optimum one has the most risk. But if you pull it off,
yep.
you can get through every single encounter without losing any health.
And whenever you use your shield, whether you throw it or you use it to block, it'll take one of those hit points exactly. away from it. And yep. that becomes very important as well. We have these skeletons as well that throw axes. And this axe yep. is like a boomerang again. It goes really, really far away in a straight line and comes back again. And you can be hurt both ways.
Yes.
So how did you approach those?
So I would wait for them to throw, because they would throw at you on a... they would throw at you, and then there would be a time delay then as the hammer was going, the axe was going out and then coming back.
Yes.
So it might be, you might have 3 or 4 seconds before the skeleton's ready to throw again.
Yep.
But that is enough time to jump over the throw, kind of go on a sideways angle to them,
yep.
getting close. You've got to be careful that the axe coming back doesn't hit you.
Yes.
But if you get side on out of the trajectory, because even when you kill the skeleton, the axe doesn't disappear. So that will still come back. You've got to make sure you don't get in the way of it. That was my strategy with that.
Okay. So I would, in the beginning, I would use my shield.
I'd
wait for it to throw its axe, use the shield, and then rush it. But then I figured out, well, I'm hurting my shield here. This can be done better. So I started doing what you said, jumping over the axe, and then
Be really careful.
Then doing one of those double jumps and triangle to do that hard attack where he just thrusts his sword down into the ground.
Yeah.
Because that would throw him off balance, and then the sword or the axe wouldn't come back. I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
And then you'd have to attack them again.
You'd have to doom strike again when they were on the ground.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And then he'd finally be dead.
So what did you do about the mimics then? The chests that turned into vicious little things?
I would always be ready to jump when I opened the chest.
Whenever
always.
You open
the chest. And it would be hit and miss 50% of the time. A mimic would bite me, and 50% of the time I would get a double jump in and then actually just strike it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some... more specialist enemies later in the game, aren't they? Like the big things. I think they're called, are they called the monster portals? They stand in front of those portals, really big things.
Yep.
And if you have to keep hitting them and hitting them, clanging them on the helmets.
Mm, yes.
And then if you do that enough, they kind of slump down and you can doom strike them.
No, it's the other way around. You do a doom strike and then they slump down. Then you can jump up and hit the helmet. You can't reach the helmet without
doom strike. Okay, so you have to doom strike to get them to slump, do you?
Yeah, you do.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but they, again, for the, you know, when I first confronted with them, I thought, wow, how am I supposed to do this?
Yep.
And there tend to be other enemies around. There might be a wizard even.
Yes, yes.
And it just ramps up the difficulty. What about those enemies that would pick you up and throw you off the edge of a ledge?
Oh, yeah. Those were so annoying. like witches, I think they were.
Yeah. They'd ride in on the broomstick, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Swipe you up.
Yeah. So you needed to give them a good whack with the sword as soon as they got close enough, because they were so annoying.
Because what things that you have to watch out here is that the animation is really wonderful.
Mm.
But if you swing and miss... Because of the animation cycle that the character will go through, you're exposed for about 2 seconds.
Yes. But that's a part of that's not only the animation cycle. That was part of the game.
That's part of the combat.
I mean, you needed to be not perfect timing, but have very tight timing to get these punches to land, right? Especially when we're just up against like the red sword wielding skeletons with the shield. You needed to block them at the right time and hit them at the right time. And if you thought you could just double jump and doom dash those guys, you'd be in for a surprise.
No.
They'd block you. And while you were just confused a bit, they'd hit you. So, I mean, this was brilliant. And it was always fair, because all of these enemies would be fighting in the same way every single time. So you'd learn how to manage them. And just when you thought, okay, now I know how to kill all the enemy types, the game would throw like two of them at the same time, two different types at the same time. And you'd be, oh, Christ, how can I do this? And you'd try to work that out as well. So it would always challenge you, even though you knew how to get through every single kind of combat there.
Yeah. I can hear Raushi screaming now. Yeah, but what? How can you say it's fair when those baddies that would spawn on a ledge that you're trying to jump to? Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Occasionally, they would be very deliberately placed on a ledge that you were trying to jump to. Now, you've either got to take those bad boys out with your shield before you get there, or you've got to be ready as soon as you land.
Yep.
You've got to know exactly what you're going to do.
Or land directly into one of those...
Or land on a Doomstrike.
Doomstrikes, yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah.
There are some power-ups as well. So you don't, you know, there are very basic power-ups with your sword. You might not remember, but right at the start of the game, you can't even attack twice in quick succession. Because the very basic Maximo, when you start, you get one swipe and then you have to wait and then you can swipe again.
Oh,
there is,
I forgot.
The very first power-up you get is a power called Second Strike, which gives you an ability to attack again quickly, so you can swipe,
yeah,
which means that you can defod the skeletons. You can, in one movement, you can just defeat them.
Yeah.
The Mighty Blow is the triangle attack, which is the cleave, almost like the cleave animation.
Yeah. Another thing. There are two kinds of blows and different enemy types with different abilities. You need to use the different attacks as well. I mean, if you staggered an enemy, put in a hard attack with the triangle to give them a lot of damage, right?
Yeah. Mm. And then some of the more advanced power-ups that come with the sword are the likes of the longer sword, which is one that I really kept hold of. And we'll talk about this concept of this mechanic in a minute of how you can retain power-ups and what happens when you die. But there is the long sword, the shockwave. So when you did a Doom Strike, you'd get this shockwave that would stagger enemies.
Yeah.
Again, really important if you were surrounded, which you often are in the later levels by multiple skeletons, you can just knock them back a little bit. There's Gold Seekers. So if you did a Doom Strike, it would send out this almost like a sonar that would show where there are chests.
Yeah.
And then there were things like Magic Bolts. So you had like a ranged... magic attack from your sword, which, to be honest, I didn't really ever use that.
No, I didn't use that a lot.
But the game gives you a chance to really customize how you want to go about taking on these baddies.
The flame sword as well, and the frostbite, where whenever you hit an enemy, he'd be turned into an icicle.
And then my favorite was the Pure Blade, which was the like the white. Which I think was the most powerful of the power. It didn't have any special effects like the frostbite, which is very cool graphically, turning them into an ice block and then smashing them.
Yeah.
But I always found that the Pure Blade, the white one, was the one which was the most powerful.
Mm.
So you can kill the really powerful, I think it was the red skeletons. If you could land a hit past their shield, you just kill them in one go.
Okay.
So that was my favorite. Mm. But these power-ups then... So the power-ups like the long sword, the magic bolt, the shield power-ups even, you know, for the shield of Midas, or the shield that sets off the electrical bolts when you throw them into the baddies. You could only have so many of those locked in at any one time. You could swap them in and out. But I think it starts off with three right at the start of the game. And then for every world that you beat, you get an additional safe power-up.
Yeah.
So if you die, those power-ups that aren't in one of your locked-in safe slots, your 3, 4, or 5, you'll lose them.
Yeah.
So think R-Type on a shooter, or think something like Gradius on a shooter. When you die, you lose all your power-ups.
Yeah, but you don't, because you do have some locked slots here, which is brilliant.
Exactly. And you can select... which power-ups you want to go in those locked slots. Again, it gives you real customization as to how you approach the battles, depending on which power-ups you value over others. It's such a really cool mechanic. And again, it makes you really value your power-ups.
Why didn't you tell me this before? I didn't know you could choose which ones you wanted to save. I thought that was just random. You could swap
them in and out.
I didn't know.
Yeah, you could swap them in and out.
Okay.
So... you just thought it was dependent on what order you picked them up?
Yeah, I thought that was it.
Mm. Yeah, no, you can swap them in and out. So the ones that you favoured, you could keep for good.
Okay. Well, I had a good set of power-ups, so I was happy, I guess. But I didn't know you could actually just choose them yourself.
Because when if you go a while without dying, you feel really strong.
Oh, yeah, you'll have power-ups from one side of the screen to the other. I mean, it'll be totally full in the at the bottom there.
It makes a huge difference to your ability to get through some of these later levels. Yeah. I mean, there were times if I lost a life, I'd think, oh, God, I've now got to build all those up again. It's going to be really difficult.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Hmm. What haven't we covered? So, okay, we need to go on to these two elephants in the room, the camera.
Mm, yes, yes.
So one of the biggest criticisms of Maximo that it got from the even from the contemporary reviews was the camera.
Yeah.
Now, it's one of the things that, to my mind, holds it back from superstardom. Okay. You made a really good comparison to Mario 64 earlier, and I completely agree with it. On level design, from to my mind, it's one of the best Western 3D platformers I've ever played in terms of level design. It is absolutely incredible that they've got up to those levels. What holds it back is the camera, to my mind.
So I mean, the camera, you have no control over it. Didn't have that much of a problem with it. Well, you've got plenty of control over the camera.
Oh, but other than you can focus it behind you.
You can focus it behind you, and you can, if you have, I think those sections where people were talking about they're having big problems with the camera, I'm not sure they knew that they could just hold in the L1 button. And then it would actually...
You have to stand still for that, though.
It had... No. While you're running around, you'll have some kind of follow focus, really. And that worked brilliantly.
Well, if it focuses behind you, if you press the L1 button,
while you're running around, it'll try to focus behind you somewhat.
Yeah.
So that just works. I mean, I didn't have a problem with the camera at all. There was one place in one level where you are running through these hedge mazes.
Yeah. that's on the final world, isn't it? On the Maximo realm.
Yeah, it could be.
Maximo. Yeah, it was.
So in that level, there were some places where I didn't really know what to expect around the corner because I couldn't control the camera because I was in these very, very close quarters with these hedge mazes. That's the only part of this game where I had a problem with the camera. Apart from that, no, I have no problem with the camera. And you do have control of it as you did in these earlier games. You don't have an analog stick for itself to control a camera as we're used
to
today.
But you do. I mean, you've got the right analog stick that does nothing.
Oh, yeah, but as a, they haven't used that. They should have done that. That would have been brilliant, but nobody did that back in the day. So that would have been brilliant if they'd done that, but they didn't. But as it is right now, it's still very, very playable. I had no problem with that camera.
For me, it broke whenever you were in close quarters with the scenery. Whenever you were close, backed up to the scenery, and you were trying to position the camera behind you, it wouldn't have a clue what to do.
Okay.
And you'd end up in some really unfortunate camera angle. And this game, you have to know what's around you. Yeah. You have to. Mm. You know, if you don't, the whole thing falls apart because then it really does feel unfair if you can't see what's around you. So at those points when you couldn't,
but
those points when the camera I couldn't get it into the position that I wanted it in.
Okay.
They're so frustrating, and it's magnified by the fact that you know that the game needs it to be where you want that camera to be.
Mm. Yep.
It didn't happen loads, to be honest.
I totally understand that criticism. I didn't see it as a problem myself. I really didn't.
And Mario 64 is proof of concept that you could get this right without a right analog stick giving you complete control.
But I disagree. I don't think the Mario 64 camera is that good, really. I mean, you have these.
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, okay. I think you have the same problems there when you get into close quarters with stuff.
Perhaps. That is the biggest criticism for me, and it did feel like it was really holding it back.
Yeah, I totally understand that. If there's something to criticize here, it's definitely the camera. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was something that they did fix in the second game.
Yeah.
So the couple of interviews I've read with Siller and Rogers as well, they admitted that they could have implemented the camera better.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure, I've not played Army of Sin, but from what I've read, I'm pretty sure that you do get full control on the right analog stick of the camera. I mean, there's no reason why in this game that they couldn't have given you that.
No.
I said I had two elephants in the room. That was actually the only one. I think the other one I was going to mention was some of the I know the Discord listeners, members will want us to mention what they perceive to be some really unfair enemy placement, particularly on ledges that you're jumping onto.
Yeah.
I never found it a problem for the reasons we've said.
No, I'd use the save shield
Yeah. Doomstrike.
Yeah.
The save system is another thing that gets a lot of heat, and it got a lot of heat critically at the time. Again, to my mind, it was part of it was part of the mechanics. It was part of the system. It was what made the game tense and enjoyable. I really didn't mind it at all.
No. If you like a challenge and you'd like to see what I think is some of the very best that the PS2 has to offer, this is definitely a game you need to have a look at.
Yeah, it's a throwback, not to games of the 1980s, but to my mind, it's a throwback to games of the 90s. It was games when they were difficult but doable, and if anything, possibly by the end of it, I felt like it was maybe not as difficult as it could have been. Perhaps I beat the final boss on the first go.
Yeah, me too. I was close to dying.
Felt like a little bit of an anticlimax. Yeah, so was I think. Mm. Yeah. It's a wonderful game. It got great reviews at the time. 9s out of 10s, 8s out of 10s. It was very well received by the critical press. And it sold okay as well. It got a PS2 Greatest Hit release, which means that it would have had to have sold 400,000 units.
Mm, yeah.
That's a lot of units.
According to Moby Games, it was released on the PlayStation 3 as well, 10 years later.
It did. 11 PS4 years later. Release. Mm. Yeah. That release is no longer available.
Okay.
Because the PS3 store is no longer available.
Nope.
And I did check on the PS4 and it's not there.
Okay. Hmm.
So you can't buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great game. It's a game that I would recommend to absolutely everybody. And what I would say is give it some time. Don't get to the first round of enemies. Have them kill you, because they will. Most things in this game will kill you at least once.
Yes.
Stick with it, because, man, this is close, very close. And I said it on Twitter at the time. It's very close to me for really getting into those upper echelons of the greatest games I've ever played.
Mm. Yeah.
And that is big praise. It's one of... if not my favourite PS2 game, it is most definitely one of them.
Yeah, this easily makes my top 5 for PS2 games. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, the level design, the combat, the everything just it oozes charm, and it's just good fun. But it's also a game that I rage quit pretty much every time I turned off the PS2, which was because, oh, I can't take any more of this. I put the controller away and turn it off. And then I'll go back half an hour later. I'm just going to have one more go. So it is a tough game, but it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, it got a sequel.
Yeah.
It got Army of Zin is the sequel. Mm. And it's one that I really hope when we do our sequels theme, which we will again, it will be well high up on my list.
Yeah.
There was a third game planned, but it was canned.
Okay.
It was never released.
Yeah.
And there was this really weird spin-off with Incredible Machine as well.
Yeah, I saw.
Look that up. Mm. Look that up. I mean, that is very, very strange. And that was the last we've seen of the Ghosts and Goblins world.
Yeah. And speaking of last, should we have the man himself, Raushi, speak us up, talk us out of this, have the last word on this beautiful game?
Hey guys, it's Roshi. Just want to give a quick shout out to Chris and Mads for letting me pick a few suggestions to whittle down to a short list this month. I'm so used to my suggestions scraping the bottom of the barrel in votes that having 4 games wind up and running just feels completely alien to me. True to form, the game I voted for still wound up in the last place. Now, Maxima is a game I never really loved back in the day because of its punishing save and continue systems, along with that aggressively unintelligent camera. But this month pushed me to revisit it and give it a fair shake. With the benefit of emulation, I was able to pick apart and learn the levels at my own pace before committing to a proper playthrough, and I felt that really took the frustration out of the game without negating the challenge. My completion percentages were still fairly poor since I inevitably would take a more risk-averse approach to each level. My primary concern was always to get at least 100 coins so I could save, and then the secondary goal was trying to get the armor pickups whenever I could. I cheated a little bit by seeing what you got for accepting the kisses at the end of each level, and very quickly decided that taking a free save was far, far more valuable. Inevitably, the first level of each world was the most difficult, and that's where I'd always lose all the lives I'd stockpiled up to that point. It more than made up for the comparatively easy boss fights that preceded them, since they were generally pushovers once I worked out their patterns. All in all, I ended up loving my time with Maximo this month, and I'm really glad to get a chance to revisit and check it out from a fresh perspective. The modern solutions helped me mitigate what I felt were critical flaws and just fall in love with core gameplay. It's a title in dire need of just a light remastering. Visually, it holds up brilliantly, the levels are terrific, and the gameplay is just rock solid. All it needs is a slightly more controllable camera and a reworked save continue live system, and honestly, it'd be perfect even for a modern audience. Thanks again, guys, and I can't wait to see what the next month holds.
So that was Roushi. Thanks a lot, mate, for your clip, and thank you for selecting this wonderful game for us to play. Thanks for selecting the eight candidates that we started with. So this has been a great ride for me. Wonderful to be introduced to something you didn't even know existed and then love it that much.
Yeah, we'll do this again with other members of the community as well.
Good,
You know, for us, it's great to be introduced or reintroduced or to go back to something which we should have played more back in the day.
Yep.
This is Roushi didn't pick just one great game. He picked actually seven or eight of them.
Yeah.
This happened to be the one that got picked.
Yeah.
But yeah, great choice, mate.
Great stuff.
So that probably is about it.
We
can't announce what we're going to be playing in November because it's almost December.
Are we going to announce it? So in November, we're going to be playing Soft Porn. Soft Porn Adventure. I already finished it. Chris is way behind, so he's losing the competition there. Soft Porn is the main game, Chris. We're also, playing a bit of Tapper. There's no high score challenge or anything like that.
No high score challenge there.
So,
no.
That's what we're doing in November. Anything else, Chris?
I'm going to keep my powder dry for competitions because it is a month that I know I'm going to win. and I'm not just beating you, but I'm beating Steve Erickson as well, who got a very good score on Tapper.
So I've gotten my way with all three girls of Soft Porn already, so I'm way ahead of you, mate. Way ahead of you.
Yeah, more on Soft Porn in a couple of weeks. And it's too early to announce what we're doing in December because we're going to keep our cards close to our chest. We're trying to rope in one of the other hosts to join us for December.
Yep.
But he's already expressed reservations about the games that Mads and I would like to play. So he can do one. No, of course not. Love you, Matt. But yeah, December's coming up. Christmas is coming up. So we're going to be back in a couple of weeks talking about what we're going to be looking to do for December in the Game Club. But this has been October. What a month. And I look forward to cracking on with getting Soft Porn on.
Yeah. Well, you'll enjoy it. It's good fun. I've gone from Soft Porn to playing Leisure Suit Larry instead.
Yeah, good.
Just to compare the two. But,
Yeah, you'll race through that.
Yeah, I have done it actually already. So,
yeah, I bet you. Yeah. Any shout outs, mate?
Shout outs to the other guys. 10 years, eh? We're getting old, aren't we? So, shout outs to Dean, Matt, and Steve. Looking forward to recording a bit more. Looking forward to the Christmas episode. I always like the Christmas episode. Not sure
what
I would want
gonna to. What's Steve going to plan this year for the Christmas episode? That's what I want to
know. Yeah. Let's see.
Because he's our Santa Claus, isn't he?
Yes,
he always plans our Christmas episodes.
That'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, yeah, ditto to the other guys. It was a good laugh recording with them on Sunday. We had a good time. First time in ages the five of us have been on. Shout out to Jim and Andy, of course, over on Playthrough.
Yep.
Come listen to me and Mads talk about modern and middle-aged games with our good friends Jim Middleton and Andy Gilmore at playthroughpod.com. We are playing Hair Story at the moment, which is massively interesting as a game
no spoilers maybe. I haven't played it yet, mate, so
it's wonderful. It really is. I'm looking forward to getting back to it in a few minutes. So to the other guys, Jim and Andy, our Discord community for being stellar and wonderful as always, in particular for this month, Roushi, for the amazing game pick.
Yes.
Shout out to Jimmy Maha, the Digital Antiquarian, for choosing for us Soft Porn Adventure. Check him out at the Digital Antiquarian blog. Put it into Google because his URL is difficult to remember. And that is pretty much it, mate.
Yeah.
We will sign off on this episode that we thought would never exist.
Yes.
And now it does.
Now it does, luckily.
Have a good one. Speak to you soon, mate.
Bye.